This is the Plant on the Line program at thecommentary.ca. I am Anjan Chocolater, sitting in for Joe Planta. The recent phenomenal growth of women's ice hockey in Canada is a resurgence, as it turns out, not a birth. Wayne Norton has just written a revealing book, Women on Ice, about the birth of women's hockey in British Columbia and Alberta nearly a century ago. The book chronicles its rise to a time when it rivaled men's hockey for public interest and its subsequent decline. Mr. Norton is an historical author on a variety of subjects, primarily in Canada's two western provinces. Women on Ice, the Early Years of Women's Hockey in Western Canada, is published by Ronsdale Press. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Wayne Norton. Good day, Mr. Norton.
Hello.
How'd you get interested in this topic?
Well, that's a bit of a long story there. In the late 90s, I visited Fernie, which is my mother's hometown, a place I've always loved, and Fernie's always left out of provincial history, so I was thinking of doing a little book on the area. And in the museum, I saw a photograph that gave me a double surprise. It was a photograph of a women's ice hockey team. One surprise was the symbol on their sweaters, which was a swastika. And the other surprise was the date of the photograph, which was 1922. So did a little research there on the local team, and basically that's the start of my interest in women's ice hockey.
While you write about the early stages of women's hockey in BC and Alberta, you demonstrate that it was much bigger in Wild Rose Country, and I guess the colder climate seems to have played a big role there.
Well, yes. Here on the coast, it didn't become a viable game until the artificial ice was introduced by the Patrick brothers in their Pacific Coast Hockey Association just before World War One. So in Alberta, in the Kootenays, where natural ice is more dependable during the winter, that's where the game started, in the west.
Now, while women's hockey was played after the turn of a century until World War II, I guess it really peaked in the 1920s, at least in these two provinces.
Yes, it certainly did. It was big. It was big. Yeah. Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Victoria had a team 1 year, Seattle. It was a very popular game, drew large crowds in the 1920s.
Now, the Roaring Twenties was an interesting time. The economy was booming, there was lots of money around, and it was a time when women were breaking a lot of social barriers. Do you think these larger societal forces were at play here?
Well, to an extent, I suppose they were, but, you know, women were playing hockey 20, 30 years before the Roaring Twenties, so the real, I hesitate to use the term icebreakers, but, you know, the ones who got the game going were 1890s, 1900s. So the women from the 1920s were just sort of carrying on, you know, carrying on in a tradition that was already established.
Now, despite its small size, Banff seems to have been the junction for women's hockey for these two provinces to meet.
Yes, and Banff was actually, it's the center, it's what ties the story together that I've tried to tell in Women on Ice. It's the location of an annual tournament beginning in 1917. Women's hockey had been played in Banff before that date, but in 1917, Banff started its winter carnival. And right from the start, women's ice hockey was a big part of that carnival. In fact, for a few years, it was the major draw. It was the final event on the final day. So it offered a cup to the champion, and over the years, that championship took on greater significance, was regarded as a Western Canadian championship, maybe even a world championship was talked about for a while. So from 1917 right through to the end of the, or at least to the middle of the 1930s, the Banff Championship meant a lot to women players in the West.
And in preparing for these tournaments, the adult women's team, since it didn't have much competition, much like teams today, would play boys' teams sometimes.
Sometimes. The team in Fernie did that, and happened in Calgary, and it happened in Vancouver. I guess it was a fairly regular occurrence. Probably a junior boys' team would take on the women's team. Although in Edmonton, on a few occasions, the women issued challenges to local men's teams, which didn't accept the challenge. There were some pretty powerful teams in Edmonton in the early 1930s.
Right. Perhaps this shouldn't be surprising, but female hockey players then weren't just concerned about playing good, but they were also interested in looking good in their hockey fashion, where I take it.
That might have been true in the very early years. I think they were always concerned about playing well. But in the early years, before 1914 at least, teams did take a certain pride in having nice jerseys and caps or toques. That's true. I think it's a mistake, though, to think that would be their focus. It wasn't.
Right. You mentioned the Patrick family. That's a legendary family, Muzz, Lester, etc.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
They appear to have had their fingerprints all over women's hockey in Western BC for a while.
All over women's hockey in Vancouver for a while, that's for sure. The Vancouver Women's Hockey Club, when it formed in 1914, appeared in old Vancouver Millionaires jerseys. And after World War One, when the Amazons made their trip to started to make their annual trips to Banff, it was with Patrick sponsorship. Mrs. Patrick, Catherine Patrick, Frank's wife, was the chaperone for a few years of the team as they went to Banff. It's not clear to me to what extent that was financial support, but there certainly was support from the Patricks.
And I guess the Patricks had the women's hockey games played during the men's games intermissions for a while.
They did that Frank Patrick came up with an idea in 1921. 1921 was the first time the Vancouver Amazons went to Banff. They did well there, though they didn't win the cup. And I think he wondered if there might be some commercial advantage to trying that out in Vancouver. So he created what he called the first international women's hockey championship and got teams together quickly in Victoria and Seattle. And those three teams played between periods of games that were already scheduled between Seattle, Victoria, and Vancouver. The Vancouver Amazons were by far the best of the three teams. And, you know, unfortunately, when a competition isn't all that competitive, I guess it's hard to sustain interest. So I think they got good crowds in the first couple of games, but it was pretty obvious who was going to win.
Right.
It's like at Torino in for the last Olympics, the Canadian women were so powerful. It was just it takes away from the interest to an extent.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier about your connection with Fernie and how you started this project. That would be the other area of BC where women's hockey was active. How would you compare the activity in the Kootenays with the West Coast?
Well, it's the Kootenays that gets the credit for being the first area to play women's hockey in BC. First game was in Sandon. It's the Rossland women's team that they started playing in connection with the Rossland Winter Carnival in 1900. So they had been playing for 20 years, actually, before the team in Fernie got going. But the team from Fernie and the Vancouver Amazons, they're the two who won the Banff Championship. They're the only two teams from British Columbia who won. As far as how to compare it, well, that's a difficult question. I'm not sure how to compare it. The swastikas seemed to be a very good team. They gave the Calgary teams a real run for their money, and Calgary was the heartland of women's hockey in Western Canada. They had a series of teams, the Crescents, the Regents, the Bings, and the Hollies, that were practically unbeatable. it's interesting today, too, that Calgary, of 24 players on the Canadian women's national team, seven of them are from the Calgary Xtreme. Bit of an odd name, but that's what they call themselves. So Calgary is still, it's still a vibrant women's hockey town.
I noticed that the scores of these games were quite low, often 1-0. Do you think that this was because the teams played defensively, or do you think it was a lack of women who could shoot the puck hard, which wouldn't be surprising because few men could shoot the puck hard back then?
To begin with, it's certainly because the women's ability to shoot accurately and with speed was certainly limited. There was one woman on the Vancouver team, actually on the Amazons team. The newspapers reported with some surprise that she had a shot like a man's. Her shot actually rose off the ice. And up until that time, up until the early 20s, I think it was unusual for a woman to have a good hard shot on goal. So I think you're probably right. The limited ability to shoot and the defensive play tended to keep the scores low.
Did you come across in your work any Haley Wickenheiser's phenoms that were clearly better than everyone else?
Well, on the Calgary teams, there's some powerful players, that's for sure. A team out of Edmonton, the Edmonton Rustlers, had a phenomenal sister line. The Rustlers were the first team to win an acknowledged national championship. They defeated the team from Ontario that up until that time had practically been undefeated, in fact was undefeated, the Preston Rivulets. They played dozens and dozens of games. I think they lost three times, and two of those times were to the Edmonton Rustlers. Inferni, Dahlia Shagel deserves some real credit, and Kathleen Carson, who had the shot like a man's on the Amazons. There's some real candidates for the BC Sports Hall of Fame, I think. Certainly teams deserve to be considered by the BC Sports Hall of Fame. I would say the Amazons, the Rossland women's team, and the Ferny Swastikas should be looked at, for sure.
Now, women's hockey in Canada seems to have died in the late 1930s. There doesn't seem to be any obvious explanation why. I guess in Vancouver, when the Denman Arena burned down, I guess in 1936, that would sort of explain what happened here. But
it was already gone by then in Vancouver.
Right. Can you speculate as to why? I mean, there should have been more sources at that later period of time to maybe address that question as to why it seemed to have died.
Well, it's a question that I've certainly given some thought to, and I wish I could come up with an answer to it. The Depression must have had some effect, and yet teams all over kept going through the Depression. There were some still going in the early war years. Calgary, as I've said, which seemed to be the heart of women's hockey, didn't field a team in 1929. It disappeared there for a few years and then came back in the mid-30s. But interest just seemed to die out. And I can't explain it. I wish I could. It revived in a widespread fashion the 60s and 70s and has developed from there. But there seems to be that gap. Sort of a generation just stood back and didn't really play.
And the ladies who played back then seemed to have taken their stories to the grave. They didn't really pass it on to their daughters or granddaughters, did they?
Well, they may have done, but I was only able to find one brief memoir from a relative. I actually met the daughter of one of the Amazon players just last month. But I think for the most part, you're right. their stories have gone with them. It's a pity. Wish I'd been around 50 years ago to do this research.
Yeah. Well, this book takes us back to a forgotten time in women's sports in this part of the world. This book makes an excellent Christmas gift if you have a lady, young or old, in your life interested in or participating in hockey today. Congratulations on writing a timely piece with all the anticipation of the local Winter Olympics forthcoming, and thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
This has been the Plant on the Line show for thecommentary.ca. I am Anjan Chocolater.